Coming up at 2:07, we'll talk to Dr. Ben Singer. He'll answer all your coronavirus-related calls. But first, we need to talk to an old friend. Paula Ferris was co-host on The View. Paula Ferris was co-host of Good Morning America Weekend. And one day she said, that's it. She wrote a book on why she left it all. It's called Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. It's Paula Ferris. Paula, wow, wow, wow.
How you doing, Pete? Nice to hear your voice again.
It's great to hear your voice, too. Okay, you need to walk me through this. You leave Channel 5 here in Chicago, get your dream job at ABC in New York, you're co-host of The View, co-host of GMA Weekend, and you walk away?
Yeah, crazy, huh? I know, I thought I was crazy, too. But, Pete, I was burnt out. I did what everyone in society and in the faith circle told me to follow my calling and to lean in hard. And that always means to pursue career. So I did that. I leaned in really hard, and it was at the expense of my family. I was at a professional high, anchoring Good Morning America Weekends, co-hosting The View, and a personal low. Like, my personal life was a hot mess. The relationships with my husband and my kids were suffering. My relationship with God was suffering. The things that I professed to be true to me and true of value to me, they were conflicting with the choices that I was making, Pete, both professionally and personally.
Wow.
I had become addicted to the accolade. I was addicted to my job. That was my drug of choice, the accomplishment. I needed a hit of achievement and accolade. And I really felt this sense in my spirit, whether or not you believe in God, I do. I felt like he put this in my spirit that I needed to step away, as crazy as it sounded to me and as crazy as it sounded to me. You're at the end of your career. Why would you do this? I write it in the book about this season of hell that I endured. It wasn't enough for just my relationships to be a hot mess and my health to take a hit. I went through this personal crisis where I had a miscarriage, I had a concussion, I had a head-on car crash.
Oh my gosh,
pneumonia,
you're kidding.
Within 7 months. And I was like, all right, God, you got my attention. I need to slow down. Because he said, if you don't slow down, I'm going to slow you down. And that's really what happened.
Oh, my gosh. Paula, well, is everything okay?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, somebody ran a red light. The car that was coming towards me pushed that car into me in the intersection. So, but it was like right after I got cleared to go back to work after my concussion, it was that same day I get in the head-on car crash. Like, like,
oh my gosh.
After another.
You're a very religious person. God was sending you signs saying, hold on, you can't go back.
Well, even if you're not, if you don't believe in God, like, you have to listen to your body, right?
Yep.
You have to listen to something bigger than yourself. But the toughest part about it for me, Pete, and I write about it in the book, it's where I write much of the book, is that once I stepped away, I had no clue who I was outside of my job.
Yeah.
You know, I had maintained for a long time, oh, I'm not defined by this. I could walk away and I'm not defined by what I do. I'm defined by who I am. And then when I finally did step away, I was lost because my identity and my purpose were totally wrapped up in this job, in this career. And I think we can feel this in this moment that we're in right now, where we're realizing that maybe we have misplaced our significance and our identity and our purpose, because we're losing things on such a visceral level, whether we're losing loved ones to COVID or we're losing a sense of identity. We've been laid off, furloughed, fired. We're losing our wealth, family members, you know, the list goes on, status. And we're realizing, wow, I'm shaken right now. I'm having a hard time. I don't know who I am. It's shaken my purpose and my identity, because I've misplaced my significance in these things that shift and these things that shake when times are tough. And that's where I write a lot of the book. It's not just my experience. I conduct a lot of interviews. Jay Williams is in the book. So interviews with others who misplaced their significance, and then how we've discovered this true purpose and true calling that don't shift and shake and don't bend and break when the times are tough.
I got to tell you, I mean, when I first heard about this, I'm like, what is Paula doing? What's going on? And now I completely get it. I had a moment like this, and I'm sure people have had moments in their life where you have to figure out who you are and what your identity is. When there was a moment in my career where I got fired from radio and my TV show on NBC ended and I had nothing, and I'm looking at myself, And who am I? Well, I'm Betty Ann's son. Yeah. I come from a family of 12 children. I'm a father and I'm a husband. And I think it's kind of a reset in your life. And I hope people don't get Absolutely. To that rock bottom point that we've all been to where they can reset and say, wow, what's important to me?
Absolutely. And I think tragedy and opportunity can coexist. They're not mutually exclusive. And in this moment where we've all experienced loss, listen, I experienced a lot of loss in that personal crisis. I'm experiencing loss on a new level here, but it's an opportunity to reassess and if possible, and if we think necessary, to reset and really to root into a purpose and an identity that aren't uprooted and
right.
that don't move during a crisis like this.
Right.
So yes, we can experience tragedy, but we can also look at this as an opportunity to push that reset button if we think we need to.
Well, I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you about three things. Number one, of course, I want to get the details of behind the scenes at The View, because there is never anything that comes out from that's positive from backstage. Number two, I want you to give people some takeaways on how they can reset and give them purpose. Yeah. And number three, I saw you on Instagram this week that I want to talk about. You told a story about when your father passed away and your mother was there and you had to help her along. So we'll talk about that next. Paula Ferris is on the phone. The name of the book is called Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. It's 720 WGN.
So Paula, you had a pretty wild ride here at The View for the last couple of years.
I'll never forget your generosity. And that means that a lot of people don't know she's one of the most generous people
yes,
you'll ever
that
meet.
Is true.
You'll ever meet.
I'm
so thank you. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paula Ferris.
I love you all.
We miss you.
I miss you.
Yeah.
I really do miss all of you. It is so good to be back.
On the phone with us is Paula Ferris. She quit GMA Weekend. She quit The View. And she said God was calling. And the book is called Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. First of all, I got to ask you about The View.
Cute.
Was it a positive experience for you?
Yes. Listen, I'm not going to lie, there were some really challenging moments, and I did feel a bit like a fish out of water because I was hired as a journalist to stay neutral, but yet I felt pulled in a different direction. And listen, the viewer should expect co-hosts that have strong opinions. That's what they've come to expect, and they should expect that. It was just, I felt like I was serving two masters in many regards and walking a tightrope because I was given explicit directions not to give my political affiliation because I was still a news anchor. I was still anchoring Good Morning America Weekend
right,
at the
yeah.
same time. So it was just tough. But listen, for everything you saw on camera, I mean, behind the scenes, like Whoopi, when my dad passed away, sent me a huge platter of food. Joy and Sunny and Megan sent me flowers. Like, those ladies are my sisters, but family fights. You can fight like family, and you can still love one another.
Right.
And it's this enduring sisterhood and sorority that I'll forever be a part of. Yes, it was challenging, but behind the scenes, like, people love each other. We're paid to argue. We're paid to...
Yep, that's what people want to see. They want to see controversy.
Exactly, but and we understand that. But I think we also have a healthy respect for one another behind the scenes, to the point where I don't think people really understand like how much we do love each other and support one another. You can disagree without being disagreeable, and you can vehemently disagree with the other person and still love and respect them.
Right.
Those aren't mutually exclusive, and that happens.
You know, you keep going back to your faith. Why is it some people are embarrassed or shy about letting people know that they are spiritual? I mean, I've always said, when I tell people I go to church every Sunday, they're like, what? I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was brought up in a very strict Catholic family. I enjoy going to church because it gives me peace and purpose. But a lot of people don't mm-hmm. like to talk about that.
Yeah, I think because they're scared. They're scared that they're going to be viewed as maybe not as tolerant, not as loving, that they're going to be seen as closed-minded. But I think it's so important to embrace who you are and show up as your true self, whether you're Muslim or Sikh or Buddhist or agnostic or Christian. Show up as that person, because it is so important, especially in this moment we're in, Pete, to show up, to have really important conversations with people that you may not agree with, but guess what? I'm talking about your important cultures and traditions. If you're Jewish or you're Muslim, and I'm learning about your cultures and traditions and your religion, what's right. important to you, and you're learning about what's important to me, and we're having really provocative, profound conversations that break down barriers and break down walls. It's something that we need. These discussions and conversations are conversations that we need to be having, but we're too scared to. So that's when, like, it starts with us. Show up as your true self, but make sure that you're respecting other people.
I agree.
Okay? You can be confident in who you are and what you believe.
Yes.
But so confident, you don't have to change everybody else's mind. It's enough for you to believe it.
Right. You can agree to disagree, too. A lot of people don't know
Absolutely.
That or don't remember
yes.
that. I just don't get it.
You can see a person and not see policy. That's the other issue we're having. Like, I can't, I see you as Democrat, or I see you as Republican, or I see you as
it
a
drives
Muslim,
me nuts, Paula.
Yep. Yes, drives me crazy, too.
It's so
we
crazy.
We should do a talk show together. We really should.
By the way, I loved you and Dan Harris every Saturday morning. I would go work out. I'd have my routine. I'd be on the stair stepper before taking my Saturday morning class, and I'd watch
the
you guys.
Stair stepper?
Yes.
Thank you for that visual feat.
Well, I like to do the stair stepper because you have the TV, and then I would take my class at 8 o'clock. You guys would come on at 7 o'clock here in Chicago, and you had such
so
great,
good.
Great chemistry with Dan Harris, who I think is great, and you want to talk about a guy
he's
that
one of my friends.
He's changed his life because of meditation.
Yes. It's a perfect example. I write about him a lot in the book. You know, he's an agnostic Buddhist. He's one of my dear, dear friends, though.
Yeah.
We love to challenge one another and have these respectfully challenging conversations. But he has spoken so much life over me, and he's one of my very, very best friends. Honestly, I'm so grateful for him.
And you've learned so much. My sister-in-law, Karen, she follows the Buddhists, and she tells me things, and we say it's the mumbo-jumbo, but it's like, oh my gosh, that makes sense. Maybe I'll try to add that to my life.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we want to be there?
Absolutely. And Dan's purpose is different than mine. But it's still kind of like my purpose, I feel like, has nothing to do with career anymore. My purpose is to love God and love people. Dan might say that his purpose is to be kind and respectful to people. So everything that you do is rooted in that.
Right. Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I don't mean to rush you, but I want to get to these things. You were live on Instagram Monday night. Was that wine in your Yeti?
No, that was gin. And I believe a little bit of sparkling water. And I was doing an Instagram live with a dear friend who I'm also I'm partnering with her. She runs a company called Ever Eve. It's a very popular women's fashion brand, and they have a lot of retail stores too.
Of course.
But I locked myself in my room. I lit a candle. I put on some mascara and some lip gloss, and I had a drink. And we just had some girl time on Instagram live. It was good.
You have three kids, so it's okay if you're a working mother and you can go up in your room and drink some gin by yourself.
Exactly.
You told a story on Monday night about your mother. When your father passed away, she needed to find purpose. Can you tell that story?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I went through my own crisis and realized I didn't know who I was outside of what I did, I really realized, we have these two callings on our life. We have a faith calling or a purpose, and we have a vocational calling. Like, faith calling and purpose don't change. Vocational calling does. And vocation is just the vehicle by which we will live out our purpose. My purpose is to love God and love people. So that's how I view vocation now. My mother, after my father passed away, my father passed away just over a year ago, she said that she felt lost, that she didn't really know kind of what she was here for, because for so long she identified her vocation was my dad's wife and, a mother. And now she's not a wife anymore. My dad's gone. He's in heaven. So she's 80 years old. And I said, Mom, God still has something for you. There's another vocational branch on your life. And that's the thing. We back ourselves into a corner. And we think we have to be this one thing for the rest of our life.
Right.
So vocation can be seasonal. And I said, look at, this is how you determine what you're being vocationally called to. And it's not like a thing. It's not like necessarily a career. It's based on your gifts and talents. So my mom has always loved theater, singing, and dancing. So you ask yourself, what are you good at? What do you love? And what do other people that are trusted in your life notice that you're good at and you love? My mom is good at theater. She loves theater and music and dancing. And other people have spoken that life into her. And I'm like, you've never pursued this because you've been busy as you know, my dad's wife as mom. And mm-hmm. now it's a new vocational season for her. And I'm like, this is something that I think you might be vocationally being called to do. And it's interesting because vocation can change even when you're 80 years old. My mother is 80. She has a ton of life in her. And I think that's a formula that you can apply to whatever stage of life you're in. Maybe you just don't feel like you're in the right lane. Are you good at it? Or you love it? Do you love it? And the trusted people notice you're good at it and you love it. And like for me, I'm curious. I've asked a lot of questions. My nickname was Paula 20 Questions growing up. People spoke life into that. And the way that it, the capacity that it's manifested itself, you know, the last 20 years has been through broadcasting. So I know that those gifts and talents that I've been given and the unique gifts and talents that we've all been given can translate to so many different vocational branches. We just have to give ourselves the permission to not see ourselves so one-dimensionally.
Right. We're talking about Paula Ferris. The book is called Called Out. So give people some takeaways to find their vocation. How do they get started? What's their starting point?
Well, I think you have to separate what you do from who you are, like your purpose and faith calling.
Yep.
You have to have a purpose statement mm-hmm. outside of what you do. Mine for so long was I'm Paula Ferris. I'm a co-anchor of Good Morning America and a co-host of The View. When that shifted, I didn't know who I was. So you have to find a purpose statement and a faith calling. That's why you're here on this earth. That has nothing to do with doing. Mine is to love God and love people. Yours might be to be a kind person, to be respectful. Vocation is just the vehicle by which you're going to fulfill your purpose. The reason you're here is for your purpose. The way that you're going to show and exercise that purpose is through your vocation. Just think vocation vehicle. Go back to what are you good at? What do you love? And what are trusted people in your life? Notice that you're good at and you love. It's not enough to be good at it. It's not enough just to love it. You have to be good at it. You have to love it. And trusted people have to speak life into that. That's where you start.
It all goes back to, first of all, what makes you happy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what makes you tick? What are your inner curiosities?
Right.
What do you love?
Right.
What do you really, and what are you good at? You can love something and be terrible at it. Like, I love gymnastics. I'm terrible at it. Okay. I want to be Sarah McLachlan, but I'm terrible at it. Like, what are your giftings? Not just what do you love?
I want to be a rock and roll singer, and I can't sing to save my life, but I can sing when I'm in a car by myself.
Vocationally called. That's that area.
You did sports here in Chicago for years. Are you watching The Last Dance on ESPN?
Of course. Are you kidding me? Yes. I mean, we are breaking bedtimes for the children so that they can stay up and watch it. And it is must-see TV. It's been really good, but loving the Chicago history. And it is, well, you see, I mean, and Michael's sitting there, I think, with like a glass of scotch and a cigar right there.
Right.
So just, here's the thing. It's easy to be intimidated, but I just have to remember they're humans too.
Yeah.
They go to the bathroom every day just like we do. And most of the time they want to be treated like another human being. They don't want to be revered because that puts this unneeded and undue pressure upon them.
Right.
They're just as human and have just as many struggles as we do, even though, you know, we tend to idolize them and put them on a pedestal, but just treat them like a human. Although, like, you know, when you have Chris Hemsworth look you in the eye during an interview and it throws you off your game, like Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans were like two examples where I kind of lost track of what I was trying to say. So,
well, that's okay. That's all right. One of the things that I love about...
You try looking into Chris Hemsworth's eyes, Pete, and tell me if it doesn't just totally throw you off your game.
Oh, yeah. He's so dreamy. But one of the things that I love about The Last Dance is you can't watch it in a row. It's not Netflix where all the episodes are right there. You have to wait a week. And you can sit there with your family. It's family time for all of us for 2 hours, and we pause it. My 14-year-old son, Charlie, asks me questions because I was there in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I was at the Chicago Stadium, at the United Center, so I can answer his questions. And I'm like, this is what it was like.
It's like a historical lesson for you. It's like, for my children, my oldest two who were born in Chicago, this is like a history lesson from their birth city.
Right.
So it's not just family time. It's history. It's entertainment. And you're right. I mean, that's a really great point that you can't binge it. And it just creates this anticipation and buildup, which I think makes it even more enjoyable.
Right. It's so great to hear your voice. Thank you for coming on today.
Great to hear your voice, Pete. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And, you know, I love Chicago. I never wanted to leave Chicago. It's just doors were shutting in Chicago. And I really felt like we were being vocationally called to a different area. But I'm a Midwest kid through and through.
Sure.
Forever and ever.
You were born in Michigan, right? You're a Michigan girl.
Yep. Born in Michigan. Yep. and went to a small college in Ohio. Husband born in Indiana.
Oh, wow.
And worked in markets in Ohio and Chicago. So, yeah, but Chicago's the greatest city on earth, in my opinion. Maybe not in the cold weather months, but like 9 months.
You live in New York. It's the same weather. It's the same thing.
not as inclement, I will say. It's not as cold. You don't get that lake effect like you guys do.
Well,
you're walking on Delaware, you have to lean like 60 degrees into the wind just to make some headway.
If you lived in Chicago, you never forget the wind as you're walking down the street downtown.
And ironically, like people are like, oh, well, that's why it's called the Windy City. And you're like, no, not really. It's because of the politicians.
Right. So, it's because of the politicians. You know, but it is windy and cold. Yes. Paula Ferris. Paula, you're the best. Good luck with your book, Called Out, Why I Traded.
I appreciate it.
Let's not wait so long next time to have you on the show.
You know my number. It's still a 312 number. You can call me anytime.
It is, Paula. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
God bless. Talk to you soon. Thanks for the support, everybody.